Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
Many years ago, before I was ever involved in marriage and family therapy, my ex-brother-in-law came to me because he was considering getting married for the third time, and he wanted my take on whether I thought he should do it. And I looked at him, and I said to him, well, only if you recognize that there's a difference between marriage and courtship behavior, with marriage behavior actually being the better behavior. Because that's kind of something that happened between him and my sisters after they got married. He just kind of kicked back and thought, I don't have to put any effort into this anymore. And I think that attitude is kind of supported by the fairy tale ending, and they lived happily ever after, riding off into the sunset, and nobody ever knows how they do it. I've always wanted to check in with Cinderella and Sleeping Beauty and Belle and go, okay, how's it working for you 10 years down the road? And part of this is because in our society especially, all the focus is put on the wedding day. There's limited focus on what happens afterward. But what we know is that what a couple does in the first 2 years of marriage sets them up for either success or for failure. And unfortunately, the challenges of merging two lives together into this married life is a lot more difficult than most people expect. And joining me today to talk about some of the mistakes that newlyweds make is Francesca DiMeglio. She's the newlywed expert at About.com, and her recent post, 20 Mistakes Newlyweds Make, is a must-read for anyone who's married or thinking about getting married. So, Francesca, thank you so much for being on the show today. I so appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's like I said when we were preparing for the show, and I said, well, let me look through these 20 mistakes and figure out which ones I think are really important. And I went, oh, my gosh, they're all really important. But the first one, and I love this one, is failing to think beyond the wedding, which I unfortunately think is everybody's, it's like, oh, we're getting married. It's the big day. And then they don't know what comes after that. So
exactly.
what do you see? Because I know that you specialize in talking to newlyweds and writing for them and learning about them. So what is it that you're seeing that made this be the number one thing on the list?
Well, what I see, not just with the newlyweds that I'm speaking to, but also just in our popular culture, you can look at reality TV shows. I mean, there was a fake Kardashian wedding, allegedly
yeah.
fake Kardashian wedding. I mean, I think people get really pulled into this idea of this big party with beautiful dresses and lots of fancy food and all kinds of things like that. And they spend a lot of time, sometimes a year or two, planning that, and they forget to think about why they're getting married, the person they're marrying, and what their life is going to look like after this big event takes place. What's really interesting is that the events that we're planning for all that time only lasts a few hours, and you're hoping mm-hmm. that the marriage is going to last a lifetime. So we need to take some of the energy that we spend planning the wedding and start using it to focus on what's going to happen next. And I think that maybe our society needs to shift its priorities a little bit. And you can do this for yourself. Sometimes if you go to, for instance, I'm Catholic, we had to go through certain meetings with our clergy mm-hmm. to discuss marriage and what it was going to be like, and it gave you a chance to answer questions, but you don't even have to be religious to do that. You can
right.
do that on your own. So you can start asking questions about, you know, how are we going to deal with finances? Who's taking out the garbage? Are we going to have kids? Where do we want to live? what are our long-term goals? Is there some, you know, big project we want to work on together, like saving up for our dream house or, you know, planning a 10-year anniversary trip on a cruise that we dream of? So,
you're absolutely
think of all of that.
Yeah, you're so right. And there's very I can't think of any other major decision we make about our lives that we are so, I don't want to say thoughtless, that because I'm not quite sure that's quite the right word, but you know, you wouldn't, when we go out and decide what kind of career we want to have or what kind of company we want to work for or where do we want to live, we actually, or even what kind of car we want to drive, we do a lot of research. We we stop and think about, okay, I mean, I remember a while back I had to replace a car, and my mom said to me, well, you're going to get a minivan, aren't you? And I went, yeah, no. And she says, well, you have two kids. I said, I get that. And she says, well, but what if they want to take a friend? I said, in that particular case, I will rent a minivan. Both my kids are now adults. I never had to rent a minivan because I'm a sports car kind of girl.
Mm-hmm.
I thought of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we don't necessarily think about these kinds of things. I mean, it stuns me sometimes when I talk to couples about, well, did you talk about having children? Well, no, we didn't. Whoa!
Yeah, that's
how
that
do you not have these
the
conversations?
Mind. Right. It does blow the mind. You mentioned earlier, though, wanting to check in with Cinderella and Belle and all these princesses. I think that's part of the issue at hand here. We have this idea. We have this idea that, you know, Prince Charming's coming or your princess is coming. You're going to get, you know, see the person and fall in love at first sight, or at least very soon after the courtship begins, you'll know that this is the one, this idea of soulmates. And as a result, you know, we listen to our gut, which is good in some occasions.
Right.
In fact, I'm actually writing a story for the site right now about that very thing in marriage. However, you have to also think about your brain and your heart and your gut all together. You kind of have to bring it together. Certainly you need to feel some sentiments of love, but you also have to have some practical attachments to each other. You have to know that you both want the same kinds of things out of life. Otherwise,
right,
you're going to have problems. If one of you is set on having children and the other doesn't want to have children, you know, there's going to be a major problem in your marriage. It's going to lead to difficulties.
Well, yeah, because either somebody truly changes their mind, which is fine, or it's just a battle and somebody is going to get resentful, which, of course, we all know is the death, you know, is the death knell. But, you know, it's interesting when you talk about it, because what I hear from a lot of people or about millennials today, maybe just not millennials, is they say they can't afford to get married. And I'm going, I don't think that's what you mean, because going down to the courthouse and getting a marriage license is not outrageously expensive. What they're saying is they can't afford that big wedding.
Exactly.
Which is a whole different thing.
I actually just did a story on the millennials and how the new newlyweds are unmarried. They're not married. And this came up.
Right.
One of the couples actually told me that they would not get married until they could afford the type of wedding that they dreamed of. And I just think that a lot of this has to do with what our society has been putting out there, particularly in popular culture. And certainly, you know, there are marketing campaigns. Weddings have become a huge business in the United States.
Billion-dollar business.
Yeah, almost the biggest divorce in this country. And as a result, you know, I think people have gotten the wrong idea. And again, it behooves people to kind of think beyond the wedding. You know,
right,
you could go to the courthouse, and there would be other financial incentives for you. You know, you can file joint tax returns, and if you have children, you will have dependents you can write off.
Right, yeah, there's a lot of financial benefits, right.
Yeah, when you say you can't afford it, it is a little bit strange. You know, you're doubling your income, presumably, if you're bringing your two incomes together. So So, it's not the right answer that you can't afford
right.
it.
Well, and I want to go back to something that you were talking about when we were talking about failing to think beyond the wedding,
mm-hmm.
and one of which goes to the number two item on the mistakes newlyweds make, which is so critically important, and it's trying to change your spouse.
Oh, yes.
Did you have a question, or did you want to just
jump into that?
Well, it was interesting because I just read a blog post about learning to live with Clark Kent when you thought you married Superman, and it was a great post that goes into this wanting to change your spouse because we have these ideas of who our partner is, and even if we've lived with them, we still have some ideas, and then all of a sudden when we get married, it's like, well, why aren't you this way? It's
mm-hmm.
like, well, I never, because I had this imagination, I had this expectation that my husband or my wife was going to be this.
Right.
And you're not living up to that, and it's kind of like, well, if you've paid attention to the last 2 years, I've never done that.
Mm-hmm. I have to say, this particular point came out of my own firsthand experience with my husband. I mentioned we've mm-hmm. been married 7 years, and before we got married, one of my cousins actually sat me down and said, I think that you and Antonio, that's my husband's name, are trying to change each other, that you think you're going
right.
to get him to become Americanized, he's from Italy, and he thinks he's going to get you to become more Italian, because despite my heritage, I'm American born and raised, and you
mm-hmm.
both think you're going to get the other one to go to Italy or America, and it's going to be a problem. And, at that moment, I had to really start to think about what was going on. We were about to get married, and we were getting married in both places. We actually had two weddings. We had a wedding
uh-huh.
in Italy and a wedding in the United States to accommodate both sides of the family.
Right, which is really nice, yeah.
Yes, it was. And I'm grateful our families were able to join us and be a part of it. And I really had to say, we're going to have to talk about this. And we had a serious conversation. We had already talked about the fact that we wanted children. I already knew that he wanted to spend some significant time during the year in Italy because his mom could not travel and she's,
right.
ill and elderly. But we talked what was going to happen once we had children. And we decided that our children would go to school in the United States and that we might have to make a sacrifice here and there and be apart for a month or two at a time. And that's exactly what's happening right now.
Right.
And we both
Which is a big thing to be able to talk about.
Oh, yeah. It was hard. And we argued. We did argue. I'm not going to sit here and pretend because I'm a newlyweds expert that I write about this that we don't have arguments. We do. But we both realized that there would be more opportunities for our children here. And, in fact, we have a 3-year-old son who has just started school in the United States.
Uh-huh.
And my husband is in Italy now, and we will join him shortly. And so I think that what I learned was I couldn't change my husband. A lot of people in the family are like, just force him to stay in America, force him to do this. You can't force people to do, adults
oh, I'm
to do
so
things
glad.
They don't want to do. And it ruins the rapport between the two of you if you believe that your spouse has to succumb to your wishes or to be something that he or she isn't.
Exactly. And that's, I think, a critical component. I talk about people not making concessions, which is
mm-hmm.
not agreeing to something they don't agree to. And
right.
people, we can make that very difficult. Like you were getting some advice from your family about, well, make
right.
him stay. Well,
mm-hmm.
and he might have he might have knuckled under,
mm-hmm.
but that would have come back to haunt you
absolutely.
In many, many ways. And this is one of the things, and I want to talk about it because it's number 5 on the list, which is
mm-hmm.
avoiding important discussions. And this is a critical key that how do we talk about things and be open and acknowledging that we can have two different opinions about this
mm-hmm.
and neither one of them is wrong.
Absolutely.
And it kind of goes to, you know, I always laugh when couples come in and they tell me, well, we're two different people. And I'm going, well, you always have been. The problem is you've been fighting that for however long.
Right.
You know, as opposed to just accepting we're two different people. You have this position and I have this other position. And sometimes that's fine. We never have to agree. But there are times, like in your situation, where do we live? Where do we raise our child? And
right.
How do we work through that in a way that's respectful?
I totally agree with you. And I think when you're talking about avoiding important discussions, what I've noticed, at least with newlyweds, I think it changes over time, at least in the best case scenarios. Is that people walk on eggshells. It's like they don't want to disrupt the harmony or that honeymoon phase. They don't want to, you know, question love by saying, you know, I really think we need to talk about how you're spending your money, or I really need to think.
Or our money, actually.
Right, our money. Well, I was thinking more before the wedding, but yes.
Oh, yeah, right,
even
right.
After, even once you've committed, it should be our money. Or we really need to talk about whether or not we want children, or how to deal with your mom who's really bothering me, or you know, whatever the situation is. Because there are lots of awkward and uncomfortable situations that married people have to face from the very beginning, from the moment you are dating to, till the very end.
I think sometimes planning that big wedding, some of these things come up, and people just kind of push them under the rug, like, oh, well, that once we're married, that'll all be fine. And
right.
It's like, yeah, no, it won't be fine. And
I'll tell you, the relationships with other family members, especially your in-laws, that comes out in the wedding planning phase.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be ready to deal with it head on then and make amends if there are problems, because otherwise that's going to haunt your marriage. It will haunt your marriage.
And that's a very difficult place to be, because I've had this conversation with other guests, and my viewpoint is that the person who straddles both families is the one who really has to be the front line dealing with it, and they need to be supportive of their spouse as long as their spouse is being reasonable.
Absolutely.
But it's because a lot of times the person who's straddling, they don't actually see their family the way their new partner does, because of course they've been part of this family since they drew breath, and so it's
so
very
true.
Hard for them to be any kind of objective when suddenly it's like, well, what do you mean you don't like this? I mean, I always laugh because it goes to solving some problems. I was always amazed by how my husband folded towels until I met his mother, and it's like, okay, now I understand why you fold towels this way. I'm still going to choose them to fold them the way my mother folded them. You have these ridiculous arguments about, and I just go, yeah, when you fold the towels, you fold them your way, I fold them mine. I'm not going to lose any sleep over this.
Yes, and in fact, that's number 6 on the list, fighting over silly stuff. And I find that happens a whole lot, not just in the newlywed phase, but even now, 7 years after, I sometimes catch myself over things that are really ridiculous.
Right. And then you have to go a little bit deeper and figure out, is this really just something ridiculous, like you fold towels one way and I fold towels the other, or is it a reflection of something that really is deeper and more meaningful?
Right. Is there something else that's really bothering me, and that's why I'm bringing this up? And that's a good point. But I do think still that people should try to avoid the silly arguments and choose their battles. I know that's
absolutely
a cliche, but it's so important to do, especially in marriage. You're going to have arguments. It's a healthy part of a relationship. It's how you handle the arguments that makes the difference. And you don't want the argument to be about something as nonsensical and unimportant as the dirty towels on the floor. It would be much better for them to, for you to have the argument about whether or not you need to have your mom in with you, or whether or not,
yes,
Yeah, you know, whether or not to have the child, you know, or where your child should go to school, and those kinds of things that will make a real impact on your marriage, your future, your life together.
Right. Well, right, and it may be a cliche, but a lot of times cliches are there because they're actually true.
In fact.
You're listening to Happily Ever After is Just the Beginning on WebTalkRadio.net. I'm Leslie Dorries, and my guest today is Francesca DiMeglio, the contributing newlywed writer at About.com. And we're talking about some of the common mistakes that newlyweds make in building their marriages. And if any of these resonate with you, you can check out my free Create Your Happily Ever After strategy session at AFearlessMarriage.com. And so let's get back into this list, because I know we're not going to get to all 20 of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so by all means, listeners, go to about.com and read this article. But number 8 is acting like you're still single.
Oh, yeah.
And that one, when I read that one, it was like, I see this all the time.
Yes, so do I. So many people do it, especially young people, but not even just young people. I've even seen it with second and third time marriages, with older people. And it's just this idea that you don't have anyone to answer to and that you don't have to change your lifestyle at all. The fact is you've committed to another person. You're now part of a married couple. And you can no longer act like you did when you were 22 and single in college, coming out of college.
Right.
It's just not appropriate.
Well, and I think people struggle with that because I think this goes into, and when I talk to my clients, I talk about, well, when you get married, you don't die.
Right.
and you don't agree with that. And you don't get subsumed by this blob. And there are things that you still need to be able to do that, you know, things that feed your soul, things that make you who you are. But it's committing to something bigger. And so, yeah, if you're still going out every night, you know, 3 nights a week, 4 nights a week, drinking with your friends. Now, if your spouse is okay with that, okay. But, you know, it's kind of like, you know, why are you doing this? And
right.
I think there's a real pushback about feeling like, well, I'm not going to be controlled and you're not going to tell me what I can do.
Absolutely. And I also hear a lot of the time they say to me, oh, you don't want me to have friends anymore. That's not what anyone is saying.
Right.
In fact, friendships help a marriage. It helps for you to have girls' night and go hang out with your girlfriends and talk to people. That's not what we're saying. What I'm saying when I say stop acting like you're single is, you know, you can't go out, drink, and be. And another thing that happens often when people go out and drink with their friends and stay out all night is that there are temptations with members of the opposite sex or the same sex if you're in a same-sex marriage. And things can get complicated, and it's not that hard to you know, fall into kissing someone else, cheating, when you're inebriated and don't know what you're doing. So those are things you want to avoid. You don't want to do that anymore. And if you're going out every night, you know, with your friends and you're not staying with your spouse at all, you're lacking quality time together. You don't have to be attached at the hip. You should still have hobbies and passions that you do apart from your spouse. You should visit with friends and family apart from your spouse. But you also can't, you know, create situations that make a drift between the two of you that's so wide that you won't be able to get back to one another.
Right, which brings me to number 10,
mm-hmm.
which is spending too little time together.
Absolutely.
What I have to say to people is this: you can be in the same room and not be spending time together. We have these wonderful things now called smartphones and tablets and computers, and I'm spending time on Facebook instead of talking to you who's sitting right next to me.
Absolutely. And this is a problem parents face, too, because they end up losing quality time with their kids because everyone's on a tablet or a cell phone. And I think that what couples need to do is pick a time. I've talked about this in other articles. pick a time to just shut off the phone, shut off the
right.
computer, don't allow it in the bedroom. You know, you have to make rules that work for you. And I know everyone is now expected by their boss to be available 24/7. But, you know, set a couple of hours aside each day just for you and your family and not any of that technology, and actually have a conversation. Communication
right.
is the key to all of this, and not just in your marriage, but I'm sure you've noticed at
work. Oh, in
work,
any relationship.
Yeah,
any relationship.
At work, in your family, extended family. So what you need to do is just put that technology aside, put aside whatever work you're doing, and spend at least an hour together. If
right.
it can be for dinner, all the better. That supposedly helps with your healthy attitude about food as well. Good for
right.
you.
You're not standing over the sink, you know, inhaling
right,
something
right.
from
and,
the
and,
fast
you know,
food plate.
And if you have children, you can talk to them then too, and I think it's a great idea. You know, we're Italian, so food is a big part of our life, and we try to have dinner together all the time. So, and I think that's a good idea.
And one of the things, and I believe it was one of the other contributors on About.com, Sherry, whose last name, Sherry Stridoff, is that her name?
Yes, yes.
But she was talking about if romance fades within the first 2 years of marriage, it increases the chance of divorce. And this kind of goes back to the story I was telling about my ex-brother-in-law, that you need to continue nurturing and playing into that romance. We still need to date. We still need to dress up and make ourselves look good. We need to stay on that thing. Otherwise, our marriages are going to just dwindle away into God knows where they're going to go.
Sure.
And you know, when I talk to people, they say, well, I don't have time. It's like, okay, add up all the time you're spending on Facebook and, you know, all that other stuff. And that's time you could actually be spending with your partner.
Mm-hmm. Or doing something special for them, even if it's just,
right.
you know, my parents have been married for 37 years, and my mom still puts love notes in my father's lunchbox.
Oh,
you know,
how sweet. Yeah.
Yeah, you can do little things like that, and it lets people know, you know, the person know that you're still my number one, you're still my priority, and it makes them feel good about themselves, you know, and I don't think that, you know, we can make the excuse that we don't have any time. Certainly no one
right.
has time anymore for anything, but
well,
you have a
we
minute
may,
to do
but
that,
we
to
do
give
may-
a kiss, to send a note. Absolutely.
Right, and we make time for the things that are important to us.
Absolutely.
And I get that all the time. You know, I actually had somebody tell me, well, my marriage is important, but, and I said, now you're going to tell me why that's not a true statement.
Right.
Because if our actions don't support our words, everybody always pays attention to our actions. And so it's really important because, I mean, I know I've been hearing some very unfortunate studies about how, again, people who've been married not even 2 years aren't having sex anymore.
Ugh.
And I'm going, okay, now that should be a red flag.
Yeah, that's a red flag. We've read a lot of studies. I did a story about the sexless marriage also. Unfortunately, in the United States, it's a very common problem, and I'm not sure who out there is staying married without having sex for all this time, but it is a problem, and it's something that needs to be addressed. People need to start
right.
having sex with their spouses.
Yes, because it's not that they're not having sex, it's just they need to be having sex
with
their spouses.
Their spouses. So, yeah,
always a good idea.
Always a good idea, and you'll feel closer. It makes you feel
mm-hmm.
good. Obviously, if there's a health problem that one of you is having that is preventing sex, you need to go to a doctor.
Right.
I think often that's overlooked as well. Sometimes this is a physical problem, but if this is just a matter of, again, not having enough time or enough interest, then you have a serious marital problem
right.
that needs to
and
be addressed.
And part of this is, and I tell people, it's like, especially for women who are, sex is much more in our head, not
Absolutely.
That it's always there, but, and so we actually, number one, we have to make it a priority in our lives. And number two, there's nurturing and affection and foreplay, and I'm not just talking about the grab here, touch there kind of foreplay, but I'm talking about the emotional connection, the spending mm-hmm. that quality time together, which makes me more likely to want to crawl into bed with you.
Right. Exactly what you were saying before about letting the romance die. It will lead to letting the sex die. It's another yep. motivator for spouses to keep up the courtship. Go on
right.
dates. You know, make time together. And I understand money is tight, especially for newlyweds, the people I'm writing about, and especially nowadays. You don't have to go spend a lot of money or go to
nope.
a fancy restaurant or dress up. You can even do things in your own house. You know,
exactly.
Give each other a massage, take a bath together, have dinner together. It doesn't
right.
have
a candlelight dinner together
Absolutely.
In your own home. You don't
Absolutely.
Have to, you know, you don't have to go to a restaurant. And you know, I wrote an article a while back about why men should like chick flicks, and that's another reason. It's like, okay, you know, watch a chick flick. It gets your partner in the mood. You know?
Yeah, make
Ryan
some
Reynolds
popcorn.
isn't sitting
I
next
agree.
To her on the couch.
Yes, I agree.
And one I really wanted to touch on before we wrap up, it's number 13, and I don't know if you did that on purpose, but unlucky 13, having unrealistic expectations about marriage. I think
it was not on purpose. In Italy, actually, 13 is good luck. It's for Sant'Antonio.
Okay.
But you're right. Here in the States, that's unlucky, and it's true. And this is the biggest problem I learned about when I started writing the Newlywed site. I actually, you know, I didn't have unrealistic expectations because our romance was so complicated.
Right.
But I learned that other couples really thought that, you know, life after the wedding was going to be like, you know, the princess in the castle, and everything was
right.
going to be all hunky-dory just because they loved each other and they had this beautiful wedding. And unfortunately, there are hard times. I myself got married in 2008, actually the week that Lehman Brothers collapsed.
Oh, no.
It caused a huge economic downfall all over the world. And,
right.
And, you know, after that, it affected my job, my husband's job, the industries we were in. You know, we were both worried about our financial situation immediately following the wedding. So,
right.
You know, all I have to say about that is you have to be prepared for whatever life throws at you, and it's not always going to be lollipops and rainbows. So get
well,
rid of those expectations.
Right. And one of the challenges, I think, to expectations is that they're so natural to us that we don't even necessarily know we have them.
Oh,
and
yes.
in addition, sometimes we have expectations that run smack dab into each other. Because years ago I had a client who, she was raised in an upper middle class household, so she had a certain economic expectation.
Mm-hmm.
And then she also had the expectation that the man would be the primary provider, and she married a teacher. And so it's kind of like, okay, the math doesn't add up. And she was really angry because also they had two small children, and she wanted to be a stay-at-home mom and not, you know, contribute external financial income to the family. And I'm going, oh, you've got expectations running smack dab into each other right and left, and you don't even realize you have them all.
Right. That's right. That's an excellent point that I had not thought of. I had not witnessed an example of that sort. But there are certainly plenty of people who have the expectation that one person or the other is supposed to be the breadwinner, and one person or the other is supposed to do this, that, or the other thing.
Right.
And again, you know, these unrealistic expectations are the kind of thing that have to be discussed beforehand. So you need to have the good communication skills, and you also
right.
have to be willing to talk about things that might make for an awkward conversation or even become an argument, and face it head on and try to figure out if there's a way for the two of you to, you know, either compromise or come up with a new vision that will satisfy both of your needs.
Right. And it's those conversations are critical. And I'm going to respectfully disagree, because this is kind of a position of mine, that disagreements are a given. Arguments are a choice. And, you know, and I'm allowing that there can be some heated discussion. I'm not saying people shouldn't be passionate, but actually moving into an argument is there's a whole bunch around that I could talk about. But yes,
arguments when you are, I'm just curious. I think it's maybe how you're defining arguments. I might be
possibly agreeing
with you, to be honest with you.
Right.
You're saying you're making a differentiation between disagreements and arguments, meaning that an argument becomes more heated and perhaps even, I don't want to say violence because we're not all hitting each other, but it
can be verbally
using the
violent.
Wrong language, sure, using verbal abuse and language that's inappropriate. I agree with that totally. I don't condone an argument of that sort either.
Right.
So we're on the same page.
Right. And so, you know, I'm sorry we didn't get, I don't know how many we actually got to, but I'm sorry we haven't been able to get to the other ones because they're all really important. And, you know, the thing that I think you and I both agree about is that marriage is a unique relationship, and many of us get tricked into thinking it's just another romantic relationship, and it's so much more. And this presents us, I think, and one of the things that you do, which I love, is helping people realize what they don't know about marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And you're filling that up, and it's never too late to learn what makes it work.
Absolutely. I'm realizing as I go along, I use a lot of what I write about is because I've had an experience, either my husband and myself or through other couples I see, and I'm still learning myself. And I'm just sharing what I'm learning along the way. And I think that that's what you need to do. You kind of have to approach marriage in the same way that you approach your career, as you mentioned earlier.
Right.
You have to do a little research, and you have to be willing to put the work in to make it work. You will have fun, too, though. It should be enjoyable, and you should get a great satisfaction out of the love and the family that you're creating with your spouse.
Right, and it's a journey, because I just celebrated year 29, and I'm still learning. Thank you, and I'm still learning things, and so, you know, because it's about the journey, not the destination. And so, Francesca, thank you so much for joining me. And again, you can find Francesca and her information at about.com newlyweds. It's great stuff, and keep listening to the show so you can keep learning on how to make your relationship better. And until next week, stay loving.
Thank you so much. That was wonderful.